You are listening to Thought Thief by K.E. Preston. Chapter 15. Ren. Ren was having a horrible time in Altair, and there was no sign of it getting any better. She had spent a week in the claustrophobic kingdom, and her inquiries had gotten her nowhere. In fact, she had not been able to make inquiries in any real sense. Between Zithril dragging her to event after event, Marcit solicitously hovering over her shoulder, and the fact that no one in this palace seemed to be able to carry on a lucid conversation, getting information was difficult, if not impossible. At first, she thought it was just the noblesse, the elvish nobility, drowning themselves in drink at the first opportunity. However, it was more than that. The good ladies and gentlemen of the court might have slurred their speech, but at least they were willing to talk. The staff, on the other hand, ranged from terrified whispers to completely mute. Their silence was strange and complete. From what she had observed, sometimes the servants did not even speak to each other. The door to the servants' passage was hidden behind a large mirror in Ren's bedroom that sat flush with the wall and stretched from floor to ceiling. She had never seen anything like it. To open the door, you pushed on the glass till it clicked into place and rolled to one side. The halls were not as difficult to navigate as the prince had wished her to believe. You simply followed the painted lines to various locations around the palace. All said, she had the layout of the royal wing of Altair memorized by the end of the first night in the kingdom, but she still could not get anyone to talk to her. "Are you the only member of the palace that knows how to put a sentence together?" an irritated Ren asked Marcit one day as she was being prepared for a picnic she did not want to attend. "What do you mean, demoiselle?" Marcit asked as she pinned the back of Ren's dress and then sighed. "Please, please let me put you in something with a little bit more color or pattern. Your eyes are wasted in this dress." Altair's fashions tended towards the ostentatious. The more ruffles and the wider the skirt, the better. However, Ren's taste tended to the more subdued colors reserved for palace staff, which vexed Marcit to no end. But, she reasoned, if she was going to be kept from her work and forced to go on these outings, she was at least going to be comfortable. "The cream one is fine, Marcit."
"People are going to think I don't know how to dress my mistress,"
Marcit grumbled. "Marcit, again, why will none of the servants talk to me? Or each other? Or at all?"
"The king likes his quiet,"
Marcit shrugged, rising to her feet and avoiding Ren's eye in the mirror.
"The closer you are to the king, the less you speak."
Her hands were shaking as she made the final adjustments to Ren's costume, and she was holding her voice too tight. Ren knew the look all too well. A girl close to breaking. "Oh, so the silence is almost a mark of honor or status, then?"
"I suppose,"
the girl answered with another sad shrug. "So, you must be training to be just as mute as everyone else," Ren prodded one final time.
"Oh no,"
snapped Marcit with a sharp shake of her head.
"That is to say, I like being a member of the prince's house. I've no desire to work my way any higher."
Ren watched Marcit's eyes cloud over as she got lost in her own thoughts and worries. "Why do you like working for the prince?" she asked, keeping her voice level, careful not to spook Marcit out of her trance. The girl absently picked up a hairbrush and stared off into the middle distance.
"Because he does not scare me,"
she whispered, before blinking several times, looking at Ren's short hair and putting the brush back on the table. Something stabbed Ren's heart at those words, something that reminded her of another young girl, too scared to leave her master. She spun on the stool to face Marcit and take her by the hands.
"Marcit, have you ever thought about leaving Altair?"
"Leaving Altair? To go where?"
"Anywhere," Ren smiled. "The world is a big place. You could go to White Silver, maybe. Get a job as a personal maid to a grand lady. You could travel somewhere else. You are young. You could go anywhere.
Rin stared up into the girl's light, mottled green eyes and saw the hope of an endless road, the dream of something else. But then she laughed and shook her head, erasing the wish before it could fully form.
I have no reason to leave. The committee would never approve.
Committee?
Yes, the same ones that had to approve your visit. They must approve any travel to or from the kingdom,
she answered, picking up a paintbrush to apply a little color to Rin's lips. I see, Rin said, picking her way through the conversation, trying to get as much information as she could without fully showing her hand. And you would need to give this committee a reason to leave, but I could be vague with my reasons for visiting? That seems less than fair.
Oh, but more is required of me,
Marcite tittered, replacing the paintbrush and picking up some powder. More is required of you, a known servant of the royal family, than me, a total stranger.
More is required of me because I serve the family,
Marcite answered.
The king would never allow me to leave.
A horrible suspicion caught in Ren's throat. An old scar itched just above her heart. Slowly she reached up to still Marcite's hands, pulling them down and turning them over so she could see the girl's wrists. And there it was, a rose and crown scarred into Marcite's left wrist. Ren's mouth went dry, her heart pounded, and her vision blurred.
What is wrong, demoiselle?
Marcite's sweet voice asked.
You are bound to them,
Rin said, eyes fixed on the mark.
What's that?
Marcite laughed, pulling her hand away and rubbing at her wrist.
That is nothing. Most of the servants here are bound. It is an honor, really, to give myself in such a way.
Her smile was too wide to be sincere, her tone too practiced and chipper. Once you fully understood a binding and what it was, there were few who willingly wanted it. Still, there was nothing Ren could do. Nothing she could say would change this girl's lot in life, so she swallowed her fear and loathing and smiled.
Thank you, Marcite,
Ren replied, trying to steady her pulse, forcing her voice not to shake or show judgment.
Oh, Marcite jumped. You are going to be late.
As Rin was rushed down the hallway, she forced her mind away from the mark on Marcite's wrist and the feelings it had stirred in her, and instead chose to focus on the word committee. Apparently, under normal circumstances, comings and goings from Altair had to be approved by a committee, and committees normally kept records. That meant if a young man wanted to travel from Altair, worm his way into the bed of a young noblewoman in White Silver, and then return to Altair, there had to be documentation of the trip. Granted, there were ways around this committee. Ren herself was proof of that. However, after days of nothing, finding and identifying Grisha was at least a target to aim at. The palace lawn was dotted with tables stacked high with pastries, tarts, and canapes. Members of the noblesse were already weaving around the yard, clustered around a fountain overflowing with drink, or collapsing on couches nestled in the shade of tents and trees.
Demoiselle,
Zithril called to her the moment Rin entered the party. The prince abandoned his conversation and bounded down the steps to greet them. He took Rin lightly by the hand and pulled her forward to kiss the air above each of her ears, a greeting that seemed to fit prince and kingdom perfectly.
Demoiselle, you are stirring,
Zithril teased. Rin gave a slow smile before answering. I was simply admiring my reflection in the gleam of your eyes. The prince tipped his head back and let out a laugh that rippled out, dancing among the tables, inviting the whole party to join in on the joke.
That is what I love about you, demoiselle, your quick tongue and unblinking eyes. Ah, your majesty!
He cheated out as Brenora and her party approached, expanding their circle and inviting them in.
Ren scrutinized the little group. Clean, neat, and perfectly polished. And yet, if Ren did not know any better, she would have assumed they had just arrived after several weeks' travel. Seraphina alone looked well. Her spring green skin was radiant, and her eyes were clear and lovely. However, even she looked uncomfortable. She wore an expression that matched Rita's children being quietly disgusted whenever Ren had to do the cooking. Varys loomed over the group, a threatening mountain in the distance, whose once warm smile had turned into a grimace. Brenora's cream, pale skin had turned a sickly green, and there were deep black circles under Trevok's sea-gray eyes. Ren smiled and nodded her head at the wizard, who glared back at her with the cold force of a hammer hitting ice. Ren rolled her eyes and allowed her focus to drift around the room. Her gaze landed on a young dark-skinned man, standing by the refreshment table. She watched him sigh and glance at a timepiece. She smiled and felt a kinship with the man, glad to know that there was at least one other person at this party that was counting the seconds till they would be allowed to leave.
Demoiselle, are we boring you? You know how I hate it when your attention wanders from me,
Zithril mocked, snapping Ren's attention back to the group. If you do not want my attention to wander, perhaps you should try being more entertaining, she replied, smile teasing and vicious. The prince clutched at his chest.
Ah, you wound me. Demoiselle Monixter, Lieutenant Blackstone, please, entertain this cruel woman as I take Her Majesty and Monsieur Ambassador to greet my sister. I am afraid she missed saying hello to you at our last event.
Of course, Seraphina said, and Zithril prowled away, the queen and Varys in tow. The trio blinked at each other. Rin had been at most of the events the queen and her companions had been invited to. However, they had not spoken to each other since that nightmare of a dinner. She tended to start in the center of the room, next to the prince and his entourage, and slowly work her way out to the exit as she tried to escape. The queen, on the other hand, had a habit of getting caught by the door and spending the rest of the party trying to force her way to the center of the action. As a result, their paths had not crossed, and Rin was left wondering if her fellow outsiders were finding the Hidden Kingdom as frustrating as she was. So, Ren began, breaking the silence with a small clap. How are you enjoying Altair?
Well enough,
Trevok growled with his signature glower. Ren sighed and rolled her eyes for what felt like the 100th time at this man. Really, she had no patience for this, or anything, today. Charming as ever, Trevok. Seraphina, nice seeing you again. Enjoy the picnic, she said, turning to leave.
Wait!
Seraphina called out before Ren could go. She stopped and looked at the woman. There was a slight flutter of the lady-in-waiting's fingers, an unmistakable twitch of anxiety and desperation, and her red-orange eyes flickered with need. They wanted something from her. Now it was up to Ren to decide if she wanted to give it.
We haven't seen you since our first night here. I was almost wondering if you had packed up and gone home,
Seraphina nervously laughed.
How is your investigation going?
Ren felt Marcite's eager eyes heavy on her back.
Oh, how rude of me,
she said, reaching behind her and beckoning Marcite forward. Seraphina, Trevok, may I introduce Marcite? Marcite, this is Seraphina Morningstar, Queen Brenora's lady-in-waiting and personal secretary.
Demoiselle Morningstar, it is an absolute honor,
said the girl as she came forward and excitedly took Seraphina's hand and then immediately dropped it.
I am so sorry, I forget myself, she stammered. It just really is an honor. Word of your heroics at the siege of Tirindir has even reached us here in the Chosen Kingdom.
Well, the pleasure is all mine, Marcite. That is such a pretty name, Seraphina said, and Marcite tittered.
And this is Trevok, Ren said simply. He cleans up after the queen's horses. Trevok fixed Ren with a flat stare, which she returned with a smirk. Trevok turned towards Marcite and gently took her by the hand.
Lieutenant Trevock courts Blackstone at your service. I'm Queen Brunora's personal guard. It is a pleasure to make your acquaintance.
Then he bent forward and brushed a kiss across her knuckles. Rin almost choked on suppressed laughter.
Yes, I suppose he does that too, she said, before adding,
Marcite, would you please go fetch the three of us some refreshment?
Of course,
Marcite said, bobbing a curtsy and nearly tripping on her feet as she backed away from the little group. Rin watched her go before saying,
How come you never greet me like that, Trevock? Where's my dose of chivalry?
She is sweet,
Trevock answered, eyes following Marcite as the young woman fought her way to the drinks table.
And I'm what? Sour?
Caustic.
Rin gave the wizard a tight-lipped smile and raised her favorite eyebrow. She's a spy, you know. The cracking sound their necks made as they whipped their heads around to stare at her was almost as satisfying as their twin looks of shock. Or a really attentive maid. I've not made up my mind which.
You don't really think she's a spy, do you?
Seraphina asked, nervous smile probing.
My, aren't we interested in espionage?
Rin teased. She held Seraphina's gaze, looking for answers, but only finding a panicked sort of hope. She waved a hand through the air, dismissing her words before saying,
She is a servant of the prince who has been assigned to me and chaperoning me from party to party.
She's constantly looking over my shoulder, but she is harmless.
Oh,
Seraphina said, laughing the laugh of the overworked and overstressed.
Oh, of course. Sorry. I think Altair has us all a little jumpy. So, have you had any luck finding the necklace yet?
Second time mentioning the necklace, Rin thought to herself as she sized up the two people in front of her. Trevock still clearly did not like or trust her. But whatever was happening now, he seemed resigned to let it proceed. Seraphina, on the other hand, was all tension and anticipation, trying to masquerade as vague interest.
I have a lead,
but I'm afraid I'm going to have some trouble following it up.
Why?
It was one word, a single question, and a single syllable, but that was all Rin needed to know that she had the upper hand. If she left now, they would chase her, and the true reason for their questions were sure to follow.
I'm only being given access to certain things and certain events, she answered with a shrug. Not all of us have the privileges of royalty.
What events? Seraphina tried, but Rin interrupted.
Oh my, did you add these sleeves yourself?
Rin reached forward to pluck at the fitted fabric of Seraphina's sleeves. It was a close match for the Altairian dress, but clearly not the original.
No, I asked them to alter a few dresses for me. I like the fashions of Altair, but I'm afraid their necklines are a bit low for my tastes.
Well, the dress suits you perfectly. Actually, the silhouette and the colors of this whole kingdom suit you. You are positively glowing. Rin had meant it as an offhanded compliment, but as she looked at Seraphina, she realized how true the statement was. The rest of her friends might have been wilting within the walls of Altair and the presence of the rift, but Seraphina was flourishing. She was bathed in health and vitality, her skin clear and polished, her white hair shining silver. Rin realized she was staring and shook herself before continuing. I found Altair's fashions fascinating, and the skill it must take to make one of these dresses. I know a bit about sewing, and they must have seamstresses working at all hours.
What do you know about dressmaking?
Trevock sneered. The answer was quite a lot. Rita might have been the one to cook all the family's meals, but it was Rin who made the clothes and altered the children's hand-me-downs to fit.
No more than you know about spellwork, she quipped, before turning back to Seraphina.
The skill is impressive, but what is truly fascinating is that their clothes are the clearest example of the divisions within Altair.
The class divisions?
Seraphina hesitantly asked.
Probably.
But I have not been allowed outside the palace district, so my speculations on that subject are rather limited. I was talking more about the political divisions within Altair.
You can see the political divisions in Altair?
Trevok asked, voice dripping with skepticism. Of course, Ren replied. There are political divisions in every cultural pocket and kingdom. Seraphina held up a hand, forestalling any further bickering, and leaned forward. What I think Trevok meant was, you can see the divisions now, at this party. From where I stand, I can see three distinct groups, Ren said, feeling herself on the verge of getting carried away by her own theory. For simplicity's sake, I've been calling them the wigs, the ruffles, and the blouses. Trevok scoffed, and Seraphina wrinkled her nose.
Not exactly the most respectful of names,
Trevok said, tone dry. But they are descriptive and to the point, Ren countered with a raised finger.
All right, I'll bite, he shrugged. Who are the wigs, the ruffles, and the blouses?
Well, from what I can see now, and the little bit of gossip I've gathered in the course of my stay here, I would guess that the wigs make up about a fourth of the noblesse in Altair. They are the nissios and demoiselles that are wearing the wigs and powdered makeup. Their skirts are wide and stiff, their suits are bright and busy, their hair is high, and their makeup is pale. Most of them seem to be older, though it is hard to tell ages with elves. However, judging by the fact that the formal servants have to conform to this same mode of dress, I would have to say that even though they only make up one-fourth of Altair's ruling class, they are the faction currently in charge. And they would be best represented by... She paused, waiting for an answer, and on instinct, Trevok gave her one.
The king?
Right in one, she said with a grin. Trevok rolled his eyes, but he could not hide the interest she saw glinting there. The second group, what did I call them again? Oh yes, the ruffles. They are probably half of the nobility at this party. They are still wearing the knee breeches, vests, and wide skirts of the wigs, but the fabric is not as stiff. They do not wear wigs, and their hair is not piled on top of their heads to new and less probable heights. They are also younger and wear less makeup. If I had to draw a conclusion based on fashions alone, I would say that this group is holding to the traditions of their fathers, but they are also willing, and perhaps even eager, to let go of some of the old ways and inconveniences. The favorite example of this faction would be Princess Lithril, Seraphina said, sounding stunned as she turned to glance at the queen and Varys speaking to the royal family.
So what about the blouses? Am I assuming they somehow relate to the prince?
Trevok tried to sound unimpressed and bored, but he was not fooling anyone, and Seraphina was openly amazed. I am glad you asked, Trevok, Ren replied, smiling. This group is probably the youngest, the smallest, and the most unique. If you look around the lawn, they are the ones wearing the little dashes of pattern and color, a scarf in the hair, a sash around the waist. However, where the rest of the room is trying to look like they belong only in Altair, this group is trying to look like something else. What do you mean? Seraphina asked, slowly turning her head to take in the whole group. Try to guess for yourself, Ren replied, coy little smile on her lips. They are easy enough to spot. They are the ones wearing the billowing blouses and tight, long pants, or the short, flowing dresses and wraparound sandals. They were both looking now, spinning in slow circles. Ren could practically see them trying to fit the puzzle pieces together in their minds. Trevok was the first to see it.
Creation stone, he whispered. They're dressed like the Fae.
Strange, is it not? Ren said, breaking the silence that had stretched taut in the air around them. That the youth of Altair's upper class, a kingdom which prides itself on its own xenophobia, are idolizing a nomadic people known for traveling the world. Oh, Marcite, there you are.
Rin's loyal prison guard had once again appeared, glasses in hand. Rin let the drinks get passed around before saying, "Well, thank you so much for entertaining me and allowing me to just prattle on like that. Marcite, we really should be going. Serafina, Travok, I'm sure we will see each other at another one of these little festivities." And with a nod, she left them standing there, praying that they would take the bait.
Chapter 16. Serafina.
"This is a bad idea,"
Travok grumbled as they clipped down the hallway towards Rin's rooms. They were moving as quickly as discretion would allow, and their pace was creating a small breeze, wafting the scent of Travok's and Brenora's emotions directly up Serafina's nose. She tried not to gag. Neither of them looked well. Both were sallow and blotchy, with deep hollows under their eyes, but an odor had begun to hang around Travok. It came in waves, faint one moment and overpowering the next, but it was always there, forcing its way up Serafina's nose and making her uncomfortable.
"No, this is a good idea," Serafina argued in a whisper,
sending worried glances to the servants lining the halls.
"You heard her at the party. She sees things, notices things."
"So?" he hissed. "Just because she can structure an argument does not mean we can trust her. In fact, anyone who knows how to talk that fast should not be trusted on principle."
The guard let out a small harumph before adding,
"Varys would agree with me."
"Oh, leave Varys out of this," Serafina snapped.
"I do not need to. You two already left him behind."
"Stop it,"
Brenora said in a snarled whisper.
"First, we are not leaving Varys out, Lieutenant. He stayed behind because bringing him with us would make this look like official business and not a social call, which would mean we would have to answer questions later. Second, this is not a good idea or a bad idea. This is our only idea. So, unless you want to spend another week stuck in our rooms or suffering through parties, you need to come up with another plan or keep your grumblings to yourself. Third, I'm tired, so very tired, of having to justify my actions to you, Lieutenant. Halvar trusts me as a leader, and I trust him in his high opinion of you. If you cannot bring yourself to trust me, put your trust in the man you call captain."
For a moment, Travok looked too stunned to talk, but then he blinked, and as if he was unable to help himself, he said, all in a rush,
"I do have another plan. We could leave."
Brenora drew to an abrupt halt.
"Leave? Lieutenant, we can't leave. We haven't found anything yet."
"Haven't we?"
he asked, tone caught somewhere between begging and arguing.
"The rift is expanding, and no one in this wretched kingdom wants to do anything except keep secrets. They are planning something, and you are weakening."
Renora glanced at her shaking hands, and Serafina could see her shifting her weight as she tried to stay steady on her feet.
"It's not enough," she whispered. "Not enough for the council, and not enough to win any favors for Durrandir."
"Halvar would want you to leave,"
Travok answered, his voice almost warm.
"Halvar's not here,"
Renora said, pulling herself straight and knocking on the door ahead of her. The door cracked open to reveal Ren, dressed for bed in a simple chemise and deep navy dressing gown.
"Oh," Serafina exclaimed. "We are so sorry to bother you. We didn't mean to intrude. We'll just come back."
"Or the three of you could come inside before people start noticing you out in the hall," Ren suggested as she stepped back to allow them entry. The room they stepped into was one of the most modest Serafina had seen in Altair. Small and comfortable, with tables, chairs, a small couch, and a cheerful fire burning in the hearth. But something was missing.
"Where's Marcite?" Serafina asked. "Marcite should have been the one to answer the door."
"She was in the process of drawing me a bath when I suddenly remembered that I'm allergic to every soap I have in my room. She is off finding me more suitable options,
and a list of very specific pastries that I happened to be craving. Travok let out a snort.
You got rid of her. You knew we were coming.
Travok, Rin said, putting a hand to her chest and sliding her features into an expression of hurt. I will have you know, I'm a very sensitive person with very sensitive skin.
You know what you are. You...
Lieutenant, go wait outside and keep the girl busy if she comes back, Brenora said, cutting the fight short. For a moment, Seraphina thought he might argue, but instead he just clenched his jaw and stomped out, slamming the door behind him. When he was gone, Brenora turned back to Rin and asked, Did you really know we were coming? Rin shrugged her shoulders and sat down in the chair. I suspected, and fate favors the prepared. Brenora didn't sit. Seraphina wished she would. She could feel Brenora's energy slipping away, smell her discomfort. But she stayed standing, staring at Rin, evaluating her answers.
Do you know why I'm here?
No, but I am very eager to find out, Rin answered, leaning forward to rest her head on her hands. Seraphina says that you have a lead on your necklace. I do.
She also says you are having trouble following this lead.
True for now.
What is this lead, and what do you need to chase it down?
I'm not telling you. Seraphina felt the air in the room shift. It pulled tight and cracked with the cool, focused smell of mint.
Why not?
Brenora asked, at last taking the seat across from Rin. Because it is my lead, and I do not give away information till I know what I am trading for. The two women leaned away from each other, Brenora pursing her lips and Rin crossing her arms.
You are awfully mercenary for a maid,
Brenora said at last. Maids have to be mercenary, Rin replied, tone matter-of-fact. But I'm not a maid. I am a daughter of a merchant, and we also know how to bargain.
And your mistress?
The daughter of my father's patron. Brenora stared at Rin for a long moment, and Seraphina could see the scales in her friend's eyes.
That's the story, is it?
That's the truth, Rin answered, gold eyes unflinching. Brenora continued to let the silence drag on in the way that was so natural for her and made the inside of Seraphina's mouth itch with the need to fill the void. Rin, however, was unfazed. She sat, still as a cat, content to allow Brenora to make the first move. The Queen of Durrandir blinked first. Brenora let out a little sigh and leaned away from the table. The royal family don't like us. I don't think they actually like anyone. I get invited to teas and picnics and parties and lectures, but they won't actually talk to me once I'm there. Just a quick hello, and then they're gone. But they'll talk to you. The prince talks to you. I am fairly certain the prince is also constantly watching me. Did you tell her that? Rin asked, flicking her gaze to Seraphina, who was still standing in mute support behind Brenora.
She told me that you notice things,
Brenora answered before Seraphina could open her mouth.
That you're good at putting the pieces together. And I don't see anyone watching you right now.
Now it was Rin's turn to lean back and scrutinize Brenora. She chewed on the inside of her cheek before saying, The truth is, Brenora, I'm not sure if I can actually give you any useful information. The prince might talk to me, but never about anything of substance. And the things I notice really are me jumping to conclusions based on nothing more but bored observations. However, getting the prince talking to you, well, that should be easy.
How?
Doesn't matter. Next event, just follow my lead. And Seraphina, be prepared to act like we are the best of friends. They all nodded their agreement, and then Rin continued,
What I need, in return, is the records the Admissions Committee of Altair keeps of the people who are allowed in and out of the kingdom. We met with them our first full day in Altair to thank them for allowing us into the kingdom. I can't get you the records,
but I can tell you the room where the committee meets and give you the opportunity to get yourself there. How? Doesn't matter. Brenora smiled as she parroted Rin's earlier words. Next event, just follow my lead and be prepared to make yourself scarce. Again, the two women went still, watching and weighing each other. Seraphina was tempted to test the air for their feelings, tempted to lean over Rin and try to smell her hair for any faint scent of trust. But before she could, Rin was smiling. Your Majesty, she said, I think this is the beginning of a very beneficial partnership. Chapter 17, Travok.
This is a very bad idea,
Travok hissed over Ren's shoulder as she crouched down to stick a hairpin through the lock of a cupboard door. He was saying this phrase so often that it was beginning to lose all meaning.
There we are,
Ren muttered to herself, ignoring Travok, standing to open the doors and revealing shelves upon shelves of leather-bound records books. They were all ignoring him. They were all, always ignoring him.
Why do I even bother?
He said under his breath, before reaching for a book with the current year written in gold along its spine. Why did he bother voicing his concerns about Ren? Why did he bother waking up in the morning to go over strategies? Why did he bother staying up at night, studying and honing skills that would never be used? Why did he bother coming to this wretched kingdom at all? Why did you bother following me here when I'm perfectly capable of sifting through these papers all on my own?
I have no idea,
Rin said, pulling the large tome from his hand and moving towards the desk.
Oh, keeping an eye on you is never a bother, Rin. It's a necessity,
he said, voice full of false solicitude. In reality, Travok accompanying her to the administration's committee offices had been a necessity. Seraphina and the queen were both wrapped up in conversations with the prince and the rest of the higher noblesse, and Varys would be missed if he disappeared from the party. So it fell to Travok to show Rin the way to the offices and stay with her so she did not burn the whole building down.
Oh, God, surround me,
Rin swore as she flipped through the pages at the desk.
This is all in Elvish.
So?
Travok asked, looking at the other volumes and admiring the organization of the little office. A flicker of movement drew his eye to the corner of the desk, a figure of light shimmering in and out of his vision. Travok winced at the frigid pain that shot through his eyes as he fought to keep the wall standing. In his mind, he was pushing against it, sweating and straining as he worked to keep it from collapsing.
What is wrong with you?
Rin's voice brought him back to the room. There she was, arms crossed, eyebrows raised, looking at him like he was the exact fool she thought he was.
Being with you is giving me a headache,
he snapped, feeling his face start to flush.
What does it matter if the documents are written in Elvish?
I cannot read Elvish.
Travok let out a derisive laugh.
You expected them to be written in Manon?
Everything in every other kingdom is,
she said, throwing up her hands before reaching for a piece of paper and a quill.
What are you doing?
Copying some of the pages down. I'll have to see if Marcy can translate for me.
Pages? As in multiple?
Travok asked, not bothering to disguise the anxiety in his voice.
We do not have time for you to copy down pages. Someone could be through that door any moment.
Rin did not so much as look up from the desk.
This is the first sniff of a lead I've had since coming here. I'm not leaving without this information.
Shove over,
he said, coming to her side and pulling the ledger over to his side of the desk.
Hey,
she barked, pulling the pages back towards her.
If you get caught here, you might go to prison. If I get caught here, it will be an inter-kingdom incident. Now, tell me what you are looking for so I can translate and we can leave.
To his surprise, she did not argue with him, just pushed the book back under his nose, saying, any record of a dark-skinned, dark-eyed, dark-haired man being granted permission to leave Altair 4 to 6 months ago, or being allowed to enter the kingdom a month ago, or, even better,
anything having to do with anyone named Grishaw.
That is it. That's the description you have,
Travok asked as he turned the pages and skimmed lines. Something is better than nothing, she trilled, standing to look over his shoulder. The heat of her body crept up his back, and that strange, sweet smell once again tickled his nose. Honey. He was sure it was honey, but honey and something else, something earthy and full that clung to the back of his throat and made him picture warm fires and hot baths.
Could you not look over my shoulder? He snapped. It is distracting.
Rin sighed and flopped back down in her chair, drumming her fingers as Travok turned away and gave his full attention to the papers in front of him.
Well, I will give them this, he mumbled to himself. These elves keep impeccable records. The libraries of Durndur could learn a thing or two from a catalogue like this.
Durndur has libraries? Rin asked, her voice drifting into his mind like a breeze from a window.
Oh, yes,
he answered without thinking, hearing his own voice as if he was a stranger in the room.
Durndur has the most extensive collection of books, documents, and histories in the whole mortal plane. The Fae might write the stories, but Durndur is the one who keeps them.
Fascinating, she said. Why have I never heard about this?
Probably because for the last 100 years the libraries have fallen into disrepair,
Travok continued, thumbing past pages, finger moving down lists of names and dates.
When Valcor took the throne, they are not here.
What? Rin asked, rising from her chair to once again stand over his shoulder. Travok blinked, his surroundings coming back to him in a blur as he stared down at the book on the desk.
It says something along the lines of removed, or maybe just moved at the request of the chairman.
Well, who is the chairman? Rin asked, as Travok turned to the front of the ledger. His finger landed on the name, and his eyes flew up to meet Rin's.
Prince Zithril,
he said, right before they heard the door click open in the room beyond. Travok froze, not knowing what to do except listen for a movement and pray no one decided to open the door. Rin did not freeze. Quickly and silently, she snatched up the book and returned it to its rightful place. Then, in one smooth dance of movement, she was back at the desk, crumpling up the paper she had written on in one hand and pulling Travok to a large mirror against the wall with the other.
What are you doing?
He hissed. Shut up, shut up, shut up, she sang in a cheerful whisper as she slid the mirror out of the way to reveal the hallway beyond. She stepped through, pulling him along after her. The door slid shut, clicking into place, and they both breathed a sigh of relief. Travok looked down the cramped, brown-colored hall.
Where are we?
Instead of answering, Rin looked up to the ceiling at a series of glowing, colorful lines, nodded once, and then proceeded to walk with purpose down the hall.
Hey!
Travok called out, jogging to keep up.
Shh!
She hissed. Shut up and walk like you are meant to be here. Travok had no idea what that meant, and was not about to waste time trying to figure it out, not when he could ask Rin to explain herself and where they were.
There are mirrors like that all over the palace. I have one in my room. Do they all lead back here?
Possibly, she said, turning to grin at him like the goddess of mischief herself. How about you keep following me and we find out? Rin turned the corner, only to come whipping back around and push Travok down a second hallway so small he had completely overlooked it.
Hey!
He cried out as she forced him into the narrow passage, his shoulders bumping against the walls.
Shh!
Rin spat through clenched teeth before throwing a hand over his mouth for good measure. Again, her smell flooded his nose. Sweet honey and something else. What was it? Something earthy and exotic, and right on the tip of his tongue. The sound of wheels and footsteps brought Travok's mind back to the situation at hand. Rin pushed herself further into the hallway, squeezing their bodies together. They both held their breath and watched as a maid pushed a trolley past their hiding spot. Rin kept her hand pressed to his lips for the count of 10,
Then she inched her way forward and signaled for him to follow.
So,
Travok said, popping back out into the main hall.
We are inside the walls.
Correct, Rin answered, starting her brisk walk again.
And the servants use these to get between rooms.
Right again. Travok looked around the hall, at the brown walls and floor, so blindingly dull after the bright patterns and colors of the palace.
How do you know where you're going? There are no landmarks, no way to tell where you are.
What? Rin said, smiling over her shoulder. All out of clever guesses. Travok bit the inside of his cheek and resisted the urge to kick the back of her heel.
It is the lines, he said. The lines on the ceiling. They are the only bits of color here. You must be able to follow different lines to different parts of the palace.
Oh, look at that. He is smart, Rin hummed as she checked the crossroads for any wandering servants and then waved Travok forward.
Why did you even need us to show you the committee offices if you knew about these useful little passages?
Travok grumbled. He was becoming more than a little annoyed at being poked fun of and dragged from place to place by the same smug, arrogant, self-satisfied woman. Rin scoffed, and Travok could practically hear her roll her eyes. I know how to navigate these halls, Travok. I do not know what is behind every door. She said, as if it was the most obvious thing in the world, before continuing, What I cannot figure out is how these halls are lit. There are no candles here, no windows.
The same way most of the palace is lit.
Travok shrugged. Yeah, and how is that? Rin shot back. Travok came to a dead stop, a slow smile spreading across his face. Rin walked a few more paces before realizing he was no longer following. She turned and squinted at him. What? What are you grinning at?
Oh, nothing,
Travok said, strolling forward, stroking his beard into a satisfying point.
I'm just basking in the moment.
What moment? She asked, and Travok had the pleasure of seeing her annoyed for once.
The moment where I know something and you don't.
Rin opened her mouth to say something, but Travok talked over her.
Just to be clear, I am sure there are many things I know that you do not, but right now, in this moment, we both know that I know.
He was grinning like an idiot now, and he could not stop. God surround him. It should not feel this good to tease her, to have the upper hand, but it did. Rin pursed her lips and raised an eyebrow. Well?
What? No clever guesses?
He grinned as he slowly circled around her. Rin made a rude noise with her tongue and the roof of her mouth before allowing her gaze to drift over to the wall. She stayed there for a moment, staring, and then walked over to the wall and ran her fingers along the strange, flickering pattern resting there. These symbols are all over the palace, woven into the carpet, repeating in the wallpaper. I thought the shimmering was gold, but it's not. It's the light. Travok sighed. So much for having the upper hand, he thought. Still, he could have the satisfaction of explaining things.
It is a spell. I'm fairly certain it's written in the etheric alphabet, though I'm unfamiliar with that language. However, the words themselves appear to be elvish. It collects the light from around the palace and then redistributes it to where it's most needed. Ingenious, actually.
Rin traced the spell with her eyes, following it up the wall, tipping her head back to stare at the ceiling. How did I not see this earlier? She muttered before asking, Does it just collect light?
I suppose a spell like this could collect any sort of power,
Travok said, as he watched Rin continue to squint at the lines running above their heads. Power, she repeated to herself, and then, And it could funnel this power anywhere? Or is this power going to always be evenly distributed throughout the whole palace?
In theory, if a person knew how to access this power, they could direct at least a portion of it wherever they chose. Why?
He asked, coming to stand beside Rin and follow her gaze before lighting out a small, "Oh." Above their heads were red, yellow, green, and blue lines. And there, right between the yellow and green, was a faint, hair-thin stripe of light stretching the length of the hall and disappearing around the corner.
"Has that always been there?"
Travok asked, not taking his eyes off the little light.
"I am not sure. I'd not bother noticing it till now,"
Rin admitted.
"Is that
a vein of concentrated power?"
"Yes." They both lowered their eyes from the ceiling and looked at each other. Then, in silent agreement, started following the light. They switched back and forth through the maze of halls, ducking out of sight of the maids and helping each other avoid the sudden corners. Finally, they reached a section where the random jutting shapes of the other rooms stopped and the doors disappeared. It was just one long, never-ending stretch of wall, and still the light went on.
"This is a large room,"
Rin whispered, absently reaching out to run her fingers along the wall before drawing back and snatching at Travok's hand, pressing it to the wall.
"Do you feel that?"
Travok nodded as the buzzing sensation of power traveled up his arm and over his tongue to make his teeth rattle.
"This much harnessed energy is insane. It is a miracle that it is not broken free and shattered this little box of a kingdom. Oof!"
Rin dug her unnecessarily sharp elbow into his ribs. Travok glared at her, preparing to ask what exactly she wanted. But before he could, she grabbed his chin and turned him to face a door and the pooling of light and power that surrounded it.
"Well, this door is different," Rin muttered as they moved forward.
The doors in the servants' passages were all simple sliding panels, painted the same color as the walls. But this door, this was a large, impressive thing, with dark wood, dark hinges, and a massive stone archway overhead.
"Look there,"
Travok said, pointing to the two symbols carved on either side of the door and the third at its top.
"Wards."
Wards could be tricky things, and wards like this, carved into stone with this amount of power flowing through them, would be almost impossible to break.
"What do you think is behind there?"
Rin whispered.
"I'm not sure, and I do not think there is any way for us to find out,"
he answered, squinting at the markings. They would have to break the stone to get past this door, but with this much energy flowing into the spell, there was no way of knowing if that would even be feasible or safe. Travok's head began to ache again, that all too familiar ice-cold pain that made him want to claw out his eyes. He pinched his nose and stumbled forward, bracing himself with one hand on the wall. Something moved out of the corner of his eye, and he looked up to see Rin moving forward, reaching for the door. She drifted like a sleepwalker, stretching a hand out as if she was about to brush snow from a window pane.
"What are you keeping in there?"
Rin breathed. The pain in Travok's mind became a screech, and suddenly Ithril was there, dressed as Zithril and hissing in his ear,
"Push her! Push her forward and let's see what that ward can do!" "Rin, wait!"
Travok said, hand snapping forward to grab her wrist, his fingers grinding against rope and skin. She glared down at him as she struggled to get free, but he held fast. She fought for half a breath more and then blinked and shook her head. Travok could see the realization and the embarrassment of what she had almost done wash over her. He gave Rin back her wrist, fingers tingling where he had gripped her. She spared one more glance at the door before turning to face him.
"Another time,"
she said, flashing a smile and spinning on her heel to march in the direction of his rooms.
You've been listening to Thought Thief by K.E. Preston, narrated by K.E. Preston. Thought Thief is also available in paperback and ebook at kepreston.net. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, please consider leaving us a review or even sharing this with a friend. If you've really enjoyed what you've heard, there is bonus content available on our Patreon. Every dollar there allows me and my family to keep doing what we love, which is sharing this story with you. Thought Thief is recorded and edited by me, K.E. Preston, with editing help from Hanson Lyman and Mark Gardner. Thought Thief is a work of fiction written by K.E. Preston, with developmental editing and linguistics help by Amanda Berry. Thought Thief is a Lit Lab production. Thank you for listening.